This podcast is brought to you by WEDI, the preeminent national membership association for health IT guidance and collaboration. Recognized and trusted as a formal advisor to the Secretary of Health and Human Services, WEDI is the leading authority on the use of health IT to efficiently improve health information exchange, enhance care quality, and reduce cost. To learn more about WEDI member benefits and educational offerings, please visit our website, wedi.org. Welcome to the Collective Voice of Health IT, a WEDI podcast. Hey everyone, it's Mike McNutt with WEDI. Thank you for listening in on the Collective Voice of Health IT this week. I'd like to welcome Marvin Music, who is the co-founder of MedicareSchool.com, along with his son Joshua. Back in 2009, they put together MedicareSchool.com to offer unbiased and education-centric services to those approaching Medicare enrollment. Now, there's a lot out there in terms of insurance. And Medicare is fantastic, but it can be confusing. It can be intimidating. It can be daunting for people. I mean, there's Part A, there's Part B, there's Part C. There's an alphabet soup worth just of Medicare. So I wanted to bring Marvin on today to talk about, you know, what he's teaching at MedicareSchool.com and how technology and regulation are helping, hopefully, Medicare education grow and access grow. And also, what are some of the, you know, pressing issues that he sees with his students? So, Marvin, welcome to the podcast.
All right. Well, thank you, Michael. It's a privilege to be with you today. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
Not a problem. It's my pleasure. Now, we start all our episodes with the origin story. What are those motivations, aspirations, and inspirations that got you to 2009, founding MedicareSchool.com along with your son, and brought you into this healthcare realm and brought you to me?
All righty. Well, it has been an interesting journey for sure. I am 63 years old, and this is actually my third career. I started off after college, mortgage banking, real estate, loved it. And actually, then after that, went into the ministry. And I was a pastor for 20 years and full time and loved doing that. But we had some families approach us asking us to help start a church, plant a church. And so when you plant a church, so you begin with a few families. At that time, I had five kids. I have seven now. But there was no way they could support us. And so I had to actually find work. And I wanted to pastor, but had to be bivocational. So that's how I got in the insurance business. It allowed me to be effective as a pastor, but also provide my family. And so that's the journey. It began there. And I began to realize after about a year in the insurance business, one of the missing links in insurance was education. We realized that a lot of people going on Medicare were hoping they were making the right decision, but we're not confident in that. And so we put together an educational platform back in 2009 and began to do live workshops, and our business grew. And it was just really enjoyable because we didn't have to pressure people into making a decision. We could educate them so they knew exactly what they're getting into. Medicare is a big insurance program. It's confusing. So we started with education, and that really has carried us through today as well. And that really is our goal, is to be really the nation's most trusted resource for education and enrollment assistance. That's our mission every day, and have a company full of people who have the same passion.
That's excellent. And yeah, I see that with a lot. Even the work that we do at WEDI, it's just about information and education and making it digestible and accessible to the folks who really need it. You know, they have questions and you're there to help them out. Tell me a little bit about MedicareSchool.com.
All right. Well, what we started with were live workshops. I actually would travel all over the country, and the majority of our business was in Missouri, Kansas, Illinois area, but we got invited all over. So I would speak and teach people about Medicare. And then what happened was when the pandemic hit, that changed. It was very difficult to get into venues. We did a lot of colleges, community centers where I would speak, but that all shut down. And then we realized that, of course, going online through you know, websites and different videos, YouTube channel, those kinds of things, we began to realize, hey, there's a huge audience out here who want to learn. They would like to be able to learn before they make a decision. And sadly, sometimes agents can pressure people to make a decision that will pay the agent a high commission, but may not be the best interest of the consumer. And so we went online and, you know, through YouTube, different means, and people, it just resonated. And I think folks understand that when they make a Medicare decision, it may not be reversible. And so we emphasize making sure that you're confident before you decide anything. And so that's what happened. So it's been enjoyable to be able to teach really, truly millions of people now about Medicare.
And I've seen some of the videos and the comments are just, it's like a waterfall of comments and praise and everything. So fantastic. Good on you. You know, with those, speaking of those comments on the side, in your virtual or in your face-to-face meetings, in discussing and educating about Medicare, what are some of the more common questions that you've encountered?
Okay, well, brother, it all begins, as far as the Medicare journey begins, with making sure people go on at the right time. There's really a misconception that people have to start Medicare at 65. And not everyone has to. In fact, people that are still working or their spouse is still working and they're covered by a very good group plan, as long as there's 20 employees on that with that company on the payroll, people don't have to start Medicare at 65. And so that's really where we begin, making sure you go on Medicare at the right time. Because frankly, if people have a good group plan and there's 20 employees or more on the payroll, they don't have to do anything at all with Medicare. And they shouldn't, because the group plan is could be really a better option than what Medicare affords them. Now, if they're not working or their spouse isn't working, then they have to go on Medicare. And so what happens when people have to go on Medicare at 65, if they're on Social Security, they're automatically enrolled. But if they're not, they have to do the enrollment themselves. And again, it's the first time they've done that. Most people that are on group plans, you know, the HR department pretty much decides everything. They may have a couple options, but they pick, you know, check one box or two box, and they're enrolled in insurance. But with Medicare, it's different. And so we teach them that enrollment process, making sure they're coming in at the right time. And so that's really number one. And then after that, they're going to have to decide how do they want their Medicare to work. And there's really only two systems today in Medicare, and that's to stay in the original Medicare A and B and get a supplemental plan, or to get what's called an Advantage plan, which are replacement plans. Those are given the letter C. So you have A and B with a supplemental plan, or you have this Medicare Advantage plan, which is a private health insurance company that replaces original Medicare. And so what we do is we talk about the implications of that decision, because those two systems are totally, totally different. In fact, they have one thing in common, and that's I have to be enrolled in A and B to have a sup, or I have to be enrolled in A and B to get an Advantage plan. But beyond that, those systems work differently. And so it's important that people understand those differences.
Yeah, you can fall into a huge rabbit hole if you just take the wrong turn and you don't know where you're going.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And people, I think what they oftentimes don't realize is that they can't just make a decision about today, I'm going on Medicare 65, I'm healthy. Well, what happens when you're 75 and not so healthy, or 80 and maybe having cancer or whatever's going on in your health? Because that decision you made at 65 is probably not going to be able to be reversed once someone's health changes. And so we just try to get people to think just big picture. Don't just look at today, the meds you're taking today, but what you may need in the future. If you had a serious health issue, how's that coverage going to work for you? Are you going to have to deal with networks? Are you going to have to deal with pre-authorizations and all the things really that people have to deal with once they have a serious health problem? We try to confront them with that and share that with them so they're aware of it, so they'll know what to expect in the future.
Yeah, and it's somewhat, I bet it's intimidating for a lot of your students in a way, or those who come your clients, because at that age, you're really not wanting to learn a whole lot of new things. You know, like you're kind of at that point where you're like, I'm good. I've learned a lot. I've done a lot. I'm ready to, another new chapter in my life. And now I have to open up this book and learn all about A, B, C, and all everything else. So I bet, what are some of the other common misconceptions that when people first walk up to you and they first start talking, I heard this, I heard that. You've already mentioned that, you know, the 65, but what are some of the other wild ones that you've heard? You're like, whoa, okay, come sit down, let's talk.
Right. Well, one very common one is that Medicare is free or very, very cheap. And I think Medicare is a good value, but it is not free unless someone is on Medicaid. People that qualify for Medicaid, which means they have low income and low assets, they may have Medicare at almost zero, but the rest of the population is actually going to have to pay for Medicare. And it's not free. So we try to deal with the breakdown of those different costs. Now, there is one thing that is free in Medicare, and that's the what we call the A side of Medicare, which is the hospital side. That does have a zero premium. But beyond that, people have premiums for Medicare B. They have premiums for drug plans. They have co-pays. They have deductibles. So there's a lot of expense. In fact, just before we started our podcast here, one of our assistants asked me about a drug called Eliquis. It's a medication that people take when they have AFib and other heart-related issues. It's very expensive. And so she said, Marv, we just got a call from a guy that went to get a 3-month supply of Eliquis. It's about $750, and he was panicked. And that's true. Why? Because he has to meet a deductible and a 90-day supply. He's got a couple co-pays. And so he's out of pocket just on that one medication, about $750. So that's sometimes the shock that people have. They have this perception because it's government, it's going to be free, and it's not. And so we have to deal with how we're going to get those kinds of costs covered the most efficiently and effectively.
Well, speaking with Marvin Music here on the Collective Voice of Health IT, he is the co-founder of MedicareSchool.com. Now, we've talked about the questions, we've talked about the misconceptions that you've run into. Let's look at the issue. Why are we running into such complications and such confusion? What do you see as kind of a common denominator in terms of why are folks so confused? And why is it so confusing when approached with Medicare? So give me your thoughts on that. Why are we running into all these questions?
Well, number one, Medicare, of course, is a 70 million people program, so it's huge. We have the government policymakers have a lot to do with the structure of Medicare, and sometimes that's wonderful, and sometimes not so great. But my point is, there's just a lot of players in the Medicare business. You have patients who, of course, what's their desire? Hey, they want to get health care when they need it. They want to be able to afford it. You've got providers, docs, and hospitals that certainly want to be able to get paid a fair amount to be able to provide their services. You have then the Congress that's going to have their input. And then you have the payers. Who's paying the bills? That's the insurance company. So my point is, we have these key stakeholders that have to make a profit or find value. And so there's problems. And so you have a lot of people out there that are trying to provide this solution to these 70 million people. And sometimes that solution is in the best interest of the patient. Sometimes it's not. And so I think that's what brings confusion. Also, everyone has an opinion. Someone goes on Medicare, let's say at 65 or 70, whenever they begin, and they made a decision about how they wanted their health insurance to work. And so they'll share that with someone else. So people ask, their friends and neighbors and coworkers, what'd you do with Medicare? And so sometimes people get an opinion that is skewed. They get an opinion, and there could be not a full understanding of what is how the system works. I say it this way: there's people out there that know pieces of the puzzle, but they really can't put the whole puzzle together. They can't dot all the I's and cross all the T's, so they just simply don't understand, but they're going to give an opinion. One of the most interesting misconceptions is that people that continue to work, they think they have to go at least on Medicare A. That's the hospital side of Medicare. And they'll say, if I don't go on A, even if I'm going to keep working, I'm going to be penalized. And it's so far from the truth. Yet people do that all the time. And when they do that, they can hurt themselves because if I take Medicare A, and I have an HSA, health savings account through my employer, I can no longer contribute to my HSA. And so they just shot themselves in the foot, and they made that decision based upon misinformation. So that's the point. There's a lot of misinformation that floats around. Hey, one of the saddest situations I had come up not long ago had a lady who retired. Part of her severance package included a COBRA paid for 12 months. Wonderful. But the problem is when someone turns 65 and they're on COBRA, COBRA moves to the second payer position. It doesn't pay first. And so her HR department said, oh, just delay Medicare until COBRA expires. Bad advice. Well, in the meantime, she's hospitalized twice, had a surgery, and that mistake cost her $80,000, truly, 80 grand. Why? Because of misinformation. The HR department didn't mean to give her bad information. They just didn't understand Medicare. But she acted upon that bad advice, and it cost her truly $80,000. Wow. And so that's the point. We try to back up and say, okay, what does this decision look like? Are we putting all the pieces of the puzzle together? Then let's make a decision. And sadly, agents don't make money by really truly understanding Medicare. agents make money by selling insurance plans. Mm-hmm. And so what they ought to do is back up and say, hey, let's make sure we're doing this at the right time, following the right process before we push some plan on a person. And that's really been our goal, to make sure educated first, and then let's talk about what insurance is going to work for you.
Excellent. So let's go into our next question. I'm an educated guy. I just finished up my, I got my degree from MedicareSchool.com. So what are what questions should I ask a Medicare insurance broker when I first meet them?
Sure. Well, the first thing is, I think it's important for people to know when you're dealing with insurance, do you want lots of options, or are you comfortable with just one, maybe one company? And what I mean by that is that there's only really two ways people buy insurance in the Medicare world. They either buy it from a captive company, which means, you know, United Healthcare, Aetna, you know, Mutual of Omaha, some company, and that agent works for that company, which means what? They're going to be able to represent that company's portfolio only, which in my opinion is limited. If someone deals with a broker like us and others, We have contracts with most of the insurance companies, so we bring lots of options to the table. So people have to decide, do you want to look at everything available, or you just say, hey, I like this company, and that's all I'm going to do. We feel like, because one size doesn't fit all, it's better to work with a broker who can show you multiple products, different options wherever you live, because it's going to be based upon your market. And so that's the first thing. Am I dealing with a captive, limited options, or dealing with a broker? And then from there, what I think is important is that people really understand the differences between supplemental plans and Advantage plans. And let me just mention three big ones. The first one is networks. When people get an Advantage plan, they oftentimes don't understand that they have to be in a network, HMO or PPO, which means there's going to be some restrictions and some limitations. There was just a report out that said that many of the Advantage plans today do not even cover the top 100 cancer hospitals in the country. They're not in the network. So if someone was on an Advantage plan and they wanted to go to one of those top cancer hospitals, probably not in the network, so it's not a provider option for them. Now, if someone stayed in Medicare and had a supplemental plan, there is no network. They can go to any provider that takes original Medicare. And so that's a big difference. So is someone comfortable with being restricted with their providers? Number two, a big issue with Advantage plans are pre-authorizations. That insurance company has the final say-so whether you get that knee replacement or hip replacement or MRI or CAT scan or a skilled nursing stay. So the Advantage company has the right to delay the coverage, deny the coverage, or cover it. And so people don't understand that when they enroll in that Advantage plan, they're giving the insurance company the right to interfere and intervene. And this is one of the big problems today with Advantage plans. And so if they had a supplemental plan, never happens. Why? Medicare and your doctor make all the decisions. A supplemental company has no right to interfere in any way. If Medicare pays, they will follow. And so that's a big deal. And then lastly, folks think that every year, because Medicare has this open enrollment season, it's October 15th to December 7th, they feel like they can just switch plans and there's no rules for switching. They just they can kind of willy-nilly make a decision. And that's not true either. There are rules for switching Medicare plans. And so they need to understand moving forward. If I make this decision today, can I reverse it? Can I undo it? Can I improve my situation? And sometimes you cannot. And here's the last thing I'll say about this. When people take an Advantage plan, if they stay on that Advantage plan for a year or two or three or four or 5 years and want to get off because their health changes, they're probably not going to be able to do that because they have to medically qualify to switch that plan. And then they find out, oh, you know, now they have AFib or they have rheumatoid arthritis or they're under a cancer diagnosis. And that's when people would like to switch and get better coverage. And they cannot do that in 46 of the 50 states. New York, Connecticut, Maine, and Massachusetts have some times when people can switch without underwriting. But the rest of the market, the other 46 states, you cannot do it. And so we try to make sure people understand, look at this decision long-term, not just short-term. Just because Medicare has this switching period every year doesn't mean you're going to qualify to do that.
Thank you so much for that. In terms of, I wanted to talk about technology. There was a recent memo from CMS regarding Medicare Advantage and the use of emerging technology, more specifically artificial intelligence. What are your thoughts on, I guess, the evolution and the emergence of artificial intelligence when it comes to, you know, not only Medicare education, but Medicare itself?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, unfortunately, what has happened to date, and this could change, but to date, artificial intelligence has been used by the Medicare Advantage companies to determine and really almost dictate how long people can qualify for acute care. One of the largest expenses right now in the healthcare business is this acute care. Someone has a stroke or they had an injury or accident or maybe a hip replacement, and they have to go to a skilled nursing facility. It's very expensive. And so the algorithms, of course, will gather all kinds of data, of course, and the algorithm may say this patient ought to be discharged from skilled nursing facility in 18 days or in 15 days based upon the history of other people that have had the same condition. And so that AI information is used then the providers are pressured to take that data and respond to the data instead of responding just to the clinical evidence. Is this person really ready to be discharged? Now, can AI help? Yes, it can, but it should not be the determining factor. It ought to be that doctor that has the final say so.
Excellent. Before we leave, I wanted to get your thoughts. Just a couple of months ago, CMS released its final rule on interoperability and prior authorization. Looking at it, increased access and the ability to transfer data from one point to another involving patients, providers, and payers, along with prior authorization. How do you see this policy shaping healthcare in general?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a positive thing. And so I think if the insurance companies are forced to be more transparent as to why they make these discharge decisions, why it is that a person that could get, let's say, an MRI based upon just normal Medicare guidelines, why have they made them jump through an extra hoop to be able to get the MRI? And so if these companies will provide, this transparency, I think then the government's going to be able to say, OK, we've got some bad players in the Medicare Advantage space. There's some good players, by the way. There's some companies that want to keep the rules, but there's some bad players out there. And so I think with this transparency and this collection of data, it's going to help the government to be better in oversight of the Advantage plans, because, frankly, that's where the abuse is. It just is. See, with supplemental companies, they can't abuse the system because they have to follow Medicare. Medicare pays, they're going to have to follow that. So I am for it. And here's, I think, the biggest issue. These insurance companies, and if you read the report, you know this, they have been able to really abuse the system. Right now, they're getting between about $80 billion to $160 billion extra a year of overpayments. And so where's that money coming from? It's coming from us, the taxpayers. And so that's why those congressmen have said, hey, listen, we have the rules. Let's start enforcing the rules. And I think if they'll do that, including the transparency through data collection, I think it really will be helpful. And also, they're cracking down on this whole pre-authorization thing. They're saying, hey, you all cannot add something extra to the Medicare rules. If original Medicare should cover it, you have to as well. So if they'll hold them accountable to this, I think it's a great thing.
Excellent. Excellent. Marvin, thank you so much for being on the show. I'll let you have the last word. Please plug whatever you'd like to our listeners.
Okay, sure. Well, I appreciate the opportunity to share this with you. I would say this. Number one, as people approach Medicare eligibility at 65, just know that if you're still working, your spouse is still working, if you have a good group plan, stay on that plan. Medicare, frankly, is grateful that you didn't go on Medicare. They're not responsible for you. So continue to use the work plans. But if it's time to go on Medicare, again, as we've talked today, get an education. We have a YouTube channel, and I shoot two new YouTube videos every week. So it's very current. I've got hundreds and hundreds of videos on our YouTube channel, MedicareSchool.com, and get an education. Just relax. If I said something too fast or you didn't understand it, you can rewind it and watch it again. So get a good basic understanding of how the system works and then reach out to someone to then help you. Everyone has to use an agent because an insurance plan has to be written by an agent. So you're going to use someone. As I said earlier, I think a broker gives you more options. Since one size doesn't fit all. I think that really is the best way to go. We'd love to help people. There's other brokers out there as well that if they really care about you, and this is my last point, they will tell you about both systems. Frankly, Michael, we make more money on Advantage plans. They really pay us about twice the commission and longer residual. But is that the best coverage for the client? I'm not convinced of that. There is a place for it, but everyone needs to understand the implications of that decision, okay? And so that's really why you see the big push today. Insurance companies are making billions. Agents are paid more. But I think people need to understand you have a couple options, and be sure you find the one that's going to be really the best fit for you. We'd be delighted as a company to help people.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Fantastic conversation here with Marvin Music with MedicareSchool.com. This has been the Collective Voice of Health IT, a Weedy podcast where the healthcare IT community connects, collaborates, and creates solutions for a better health system. Find all our episodes as well as information on our association at our website, wedi.org. Thank you for joining us, and be safe.